This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Hey, Bart, look at this. My dad took me to Circus of Values last night and said I could get anything I wanted.
Cool, an oversized novelty billiard ball.
Yeah, you shake it up and it tells the future.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, I passed my English test. Outlook not so good. Wow, it does work.
Let me try. Will I get beat up today? All signs point to yes.
That ball knows everything.
Two of the characters in that scene from The Simpsons TV show, Bart Simpson and Nelson Muntz, were voiced by my guest, Nancy Cartwright. She's done Bart's voice since the start, back when The Simpsons was a vignette on The Tracy Ullman Show. Cartwright has aged 20 years in the interim, but Bart has remained 10. Cartwright also does the voices of Ralph Wiggum and Todd Flanders on The Simpsons. She's done voices for other cartoons, too. Now she's a star of the new Simpsons movie, which opens tomorrow. Nancy Cartwright, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, the way I understand the story, although you're the voice of Bart Simpson, when you first auditioned for The Simpsons, you auditioned for the voice of Lisa. How did you go from Lisa to Bart?
Well, you know, when I went in there, I was told by my agent that they wanted me to read for this 8-year-old middle child, and it wasn't really a show, it was an interstitial, and I'd never even heard that word before, so I, you know, queried, like, what is an interstitial? Oh, it's just a little mini entertainment wrapped around a commercial. And I thought, well, okay, fine, so who am I? Her name's Lisa Simpson, she's the 8-year-old middle child, it's a quirk, they're trying to put together this little family. Dan Castellaneta and Julie Kavner from The Tracy Ullman Show have already been cast as the voices for the mom and dad, and so now they're looking for the kids. So they want you to read for Lisa. And I said, oh, okay, I'll go in. I went in, I saw the script there for Lisa and a picture of her, and it described her, you know, as 8-year-old middle child. I read it, and it seemed okay, but, you know, it was all right. No big deal. No teeth, really. But next to it was this audition of Bart with his picture, and it said, 10-year-old, school-hating, you know, underachiever and proud of it. And I thought, oh, my God, that sounds cool. And I read it, and it was just, to me, it just struck the heart of the 10-year-old boy inside me. So I went in and shook Matt Groening's hand, and I said, you know, I'm here to read for Lisa, but I saw the part for Bart, and I'd rather read for him. Do you mind? And he said, no, it's fine. So I gave him one shot, one take, one sound, one voice, and that was it. Blah, 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 blah. And Matt, his eyebrows went up, his tongue came out of his mouth. He's like, oh, my God, that's him, that's Bart, that's him. You got the part. And I was given the part on the spot.
Can you talk a little bit about how you created Bart's voice?
Well, you know, typically when I've gone in, I've been in the business since 1981, and I'll get a call for a part on, at that time, it was just syndicated television. It was Saturday Morning Fair, because there was no primetime animation in the early 80s. And I would go in for this Saturday morning, you know, My Little Pony, Glow Friends, Snorks, Pound Puppies, Richie Rich, that kind of stuff. And when I would audition, I would always tend to give 3 or 4 different takes on a character, because your idea of what a, you know, an 8-year-old pony sounds like may be different than the guy sitting next to you. So it'd be smart to give options and let them know I'm versatile, I can take direction, that kind of thing. But with Bart, I don't know. It's like, Terry, I had this idea. I read the script. I got the idea of who this boy was, saw the, you know, the monologue, and just boom, I just nailed it on one take, didn't give him anything else. And sometimes it just works out that way.
So is it, there's nothing conscious going on when you do the voice, it just came to you?
Yeah, it just, no kidding, when I saw the picture, it really helps when you get the visual image of what the character looks like, because sometimes you might have a character whose jaw is sticking out a little bit more on the bottom than it is on the top, and he's got this sort of, there's a placement there, so you know that his lower teeth would be sticking out a little bit farther, so that would help in creating a character. Or say you've got a 7-year-old kid who's got a split in his 2 front teeth, or he's missing one of his teeth at age 7.
So he would be talking sort of like this, and you can put a sort of a sound in there, sort of like that little actress that played on Mrs. Doubtfire. So I can steal from, you know, Mara Wilson, I think was that little actress's name. I totally ripped that off from her.
when I go to the mall or just, you know, people watching, or I go to movies and watch television, I'm inspired by live action actors and recognizing sounds and trying to duplicate that. So I come up with an arsenal of characters in my head so then I can then at the next audition give them more options.
What lines, what Bart lines do people quote at you most often when they meet you?
Well, when people meet me, and they'll mostly say, "Do Bart." That's how they say, "Do Bart, do Bart." "No way, man." And everybody's happy. But I'll tell you, it creates such a great effect because they're blown away. Number one, that they heard it. Number two, that I did it without them asking. And I don't, number three, that it shocked them that I suppose that I did it at all.
So once you were cast, did the writers want to hear you do Bart so that they could write for you like in character, or in order to do Bart, did the writers have to write for you so you knew who Bart was? Do you know what I mean? Like, your voice would help tell them who the character was, but their writing would help tell you who the character was.
You know what? Here it is. It's a very collaborative art form, and I believe probably it was through the process itself that there became sort of a symbiotic relationship between the writing and the actors. Whereas we would be assigned parts, and Terry, that's not done. That is just, I don't know any other show that you would show up at the beginning. This was like in the early 90s and through the mid 90s when all the citizens of Springfield were being introduced into these scripts. I would get the script, and all of a sudden it would say, "Nelson Muntz, Nancy Cartwright." And I'm like, oh, wow. So the table read is, I would get my script delivered to me at like 2 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, and the script reading was at 10 o'clock that same morning. I had really little kids. I didn't have a lot of time to read the script. I'm like, oh, my God, I've got to come up with a whole character and read this in front of everyone with no guidance, no direction, nothing. We're just going to read this thing. And that's how we did it.
Well, why don't you describe who Nelson is and how you came up with his voice?
Well, Nelson, he was a bad boy, and I had to read the script because there's not much of a description in the script. It might say bad boy, but it didn't go into detail on it. So by reading the script and, you know, putting that in context, I realized he was just this, he was a thug. He was bigger physically than Bart. So he was also, I believe Nelson Muntz is a little bit older, even though he's in the fourth grade. But I just ended up coming up with the sound that I think Nelson has sort of evolved, and it came to the point where he eventually got a really, really rough sound like that. And he has got a really, really hard R's. And I don't know, that's how that sound came. And the laugh, the ha-ha, let me just say it for her, ha-ha, that was written in the script as it just said, I think it actually just said, ha ha. And I don't know, if somebody else would have been cast as that, they would have come up with their own idea of what that would sound like. But when I did that, it got an instant laugh. And so that stuck. And because I think it got that laugh, the writers put a little asterisk or a little star beside that. And they know that later on, they can do that again. And hopefully it'll continue to get a laugh. And it's through trial and error and through experimenting. I don't think anybody said, let's create a signature laugh for Nelson Muntz. Do you know what I mean? It's just something that sort of evolved. And I find that fascinating, too, in looking at the development of The Simpsons, that a lot of choices that we had the opportunity to make, they were just opportunities that we had. Nobody was going out there and saying, wow, when I do this, this is going to become a catchphrase. Next thing you know, this is, smell you later, that people are going to be saying that, you know?
When you do that gruff, like, Nelson voice, does that hurt your vocal cords at all? Like, is there a way of doing that without it hurting?
You know, he truly is he's the most challenging in terms of my vocal cords, but throughout the years and the 400-plus episodes that we've done so far, Nelson has only really been a lead character or citizen in just maybe a couple or three. One of my favorite ones was when it was that tribute when he came home and Marge really kind of took him under his wing and he sang that song. It was a tribute to, it was like a play on Yentl. Paul, I don't know if I can do it.
Oh.
Papa, can you hear me? He's singing to his father. Because his father, like, left to go get cigarettes or milk or something at the Quickie Mart. He never came. Papa, is that you? Is that you? Oh, Papa.
My guest is Nancy Cartwright. She's the voice of Bart Simpson and Nelson Muntz. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Nancy Cartwright. She voices the characters of Bart Simpson, Nelson Muntz, and Todd Flanders on The Simpsons. Starting tomorrow, you can hear her in the new Simpsons movie. In the new Simpsons movie, as in the TV show, there are times when Homer strangles Bart.
Oh, sure.
So can you talk about what goes on between you and Dan Castellaneta when Homer's strangling Bart?
You know, that's another great one. I remember the first time that it was written in the script that happened, and I was just kidding. I said, Dan, why don't you come over and help me out? He did. He came across this, you know, he was standing on the opposite side of me. He walked all across the studio, stands behind me. He started choking me. I'm going, and it, like, created that, and man, it was imprinted forever, and that's what we duplicated from then on out.
Am I right in saying, from based on your description, that when you're recording, like, the Simpsons movie or the TV show, that all the actors are in a room together, gathered around one or two microphones, but you're doing it in real time as a group?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it's ideal. It's ideal that we're there so we can kind of play off of each other.
What's it like when you're doing both sides of the conversation? Say, like, Bart's talking to Nelson.
Yeah, that's fun. That's really, really fun. There was one show, I think it was a take on the, I think it was called Bart's Commandments, or it was some Ten Commandments show. It was a play on, took you back in time, and there was a scene where it was Bart, Nelson, Ralph, and Kearney, I believe, and oh my God, the scene was like 3 pages long, and I was just talking to myself the entire time. And I remember doing it at the table read. I was so nervous to do it in front of that. Oh, there's like 100 people in the room, and I'm doing it just praying that I wouldn't get confused who I was. And I finished my run, and I was sweating. I was, like, really perspiring, and I was out of breath. There's no time to even breathe, practically. That is such a challenge. And yet, but if it's just, like, one scene, there was one scene where Bart had a Mr. Microphone, and he was in the bottom of the well pretending like he was somebody else, and Rod and Todd Flanders were next door, and they were picking him up on their radio. And Bart's like, Rod, Todd, this is God. What are you doing on a radio?
What do you mean, what am I doing on the radio? I created the universe, stupid kid.
What do you want from us?
I want you to go to the kitchen and bring forth all the cookies from your kitchen.
But those are our parents' cookies.
What do you want, a God, a happy God or a vengeful God?
Happy God, happy God.
Then bring forth the cookies.
Yes, sir.
It's a challenge, but it's fun.
That's so great. What were some of the differences for you doing the voices for the Simpsons movie compared to the TV show? Is it any different?
Yeah, it was a little bit different. The TV show, just technically, we only have one mic. It's one mic in front of us. That's it. For the feature film, we had two. And if you think about it, you know, a movie theater is pretty big space. So they want to get the sound, the clarity of the vocals very precise. So we had two mics, and the only other thing that was really different was in terms of directing. For the television show, we would do 4 takes per scene, and in the feature film, oh man, we would do 20, 30, 30 takes sometimes, just really trying to give a lot of options to Jim Brooks or Mike Scully or Al Jean so that they were really satisfied that they got every ounce of, you know, possible interpretation out of that line.
Yeah, so tell me more, like, what direction is like for an animated film.
I'll tell you, this is another thing that's something that I had, I'm really glad I kept my mouth shut on this, because I had been working on Saturday Morning Fair, and, you know, we didn't have rehearsals for our scripts, and to do a half-hour animated cartoon for a Saturday morning show, it took about you know, like an hour and a half, 2 hours at the most to do one script. Well, very early on in The Simpsons, we'd go in at 10 o'clock in the morning and we wouldn't finish till 9 o'clock at night. That was, to me, that was ridiculous. I'm like, oh my God, these people have no idea what they're doing. Why isn't anybody asking me? So I felt I'm the expert here, but I'm so glad I kept my mouth shut, Terry, because it evolved and the group kind of came up with our own rules of how we were going to do this. And there was a group agreement as to how the production was going to go. So it would start at 10 and end at 9 o'clock. And then the second year it was like started at 10 and we'd end at 6 o'clock. And as we evolved, we got better and more confident and more sure about what we were doing so that the process actually was speeded up. Now we're in at 10 and we're out at 2.
Is there ever a time when you're given a script and you're thinking, I really need to see a visual to get what's going on here, to get what Bart is actually experiencing?
Wow, that's another great question. No, actually no, but I think partially is that especially after all these years, we can totally visualize what's going on. But you just got to do your homework. You just got to be prepared and know that if Bart is, you know, on a skateboard or he's like riding his bicycle over a cliff and down a hill, that there's going to be you know, and I just visualize it and like, how many seconds of this do you want? Well, make it a little bit longer. Do it again, but make it longer. Nancy, you know what? This isn't a show about him riding, you know, his bicycle over a cliff. Just cut it. Like, you got to cut that about. Just give me about a tenth of that. Yeah, okay, good. No problem. Because I don't know about the length of time for the animation.
Now, your mentor was Dawes Butler, who worked for Hanna-Barbera doing a lot of the great voices. Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, Quick Draw McGraw, Elroy Jetson. How were you lucky enough to meet him?
Oh my gosh, that's right. I was working at this radio station, and long story short, I connected up with someone who gave me her business card, and she forwarded my letter on to somebody else who then wrote me back, and in a letter was his name and phone number, and I called him up. And there he had an answering machine, and this was like in 77. We didn't have answering machines in Dayton, Ohio, but this was Hollywood, you know. So I called him up and listened to his message, and it was an uptight kind of a butler guy.
Yes, hello, this is Percival Pickles, Mr. Butler's butler. Leave your name and address and leave your message, and he'll get back to you. Wait for the beep. Beep. And I listened to that thing, and I'm like, oh my God. I said,
hello, Mr. Butler. This is Nancy Cartwright of Dayton, Ohio.
And I just did a little character in return and left my, you know, left my address. And then I hung up the phone. I left my address. I said, just send me, you know, I said something like, please send me some information about your workshop. I'm interested in doing that. So pip, pip, cheerio. And I hung up the phone. And I thought, you know, that was stupid. Why didn't I just leave my phone number? So I called him back. And I'm telling you, something like that, I think that impinges on somebody. He listened to my messages, and sure enough, he called me back. And here we are talking on the phone, and he's telling me a little bit about his workshop. And he said, I'll just send you something. You take a look at it and see what you think. Maybe you could put it on tape and send me the tape of it. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you've got to be kidding me. Wow, okay, I'll do it. And thank you, Mr. Butler, and hung up the phone. And that started a long-distance student-mentor relationship that continued until, like about a year or so later, I knew I had to get out of there. I wanted to go be with him.
And did you do that?
Yeah, I transferred. I told my mom and dad I wanted to move to California, and you're going to go with me, and we'll, you know, I'll transfer to UCLA, and I got accepted and got in their theater department. But I lived for the Sundays that I caught the bus in Westwood, and I rode the bus to Beverly Hills and hopped off, walked a couple blocks to his house. He'd converted his garage into a studio, and I'd go back there for a one-hour lesson that lasted like the whole afternoon. He and his wife pretty much took me under their wings, and I mean, this was like, this guy really, really cared for me. It was a pretty special relationship.
What are some of the things that you learned by watching Dawes Butler work? I assume maybe like you went with him to Hanna-Barbera and watched him record cartoons. Was he retired by then?
Let's see, when he took me to Hanna-Barbera, no, he wasn't retired. He was still doing, he was doing Popeye. I think he was Wimpy, the guy that eats all the hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing that. He was still doing Elroy. They were still doing the Jetsons, believe it or not. And here Dawes was well into his 70s. And, well, for that matter, Mel Blanc, same thing. He was into his 70s. And George O'Hanlon, who did the voice of George Jetson, he was in his 80s and still doing it. This is what amazes me. Okay, I'm about 5 Barts worth. I'm way, way younger than, like, being into my 70s. I'm looking at The Simpsons and going, wow, is it possible that we could still be around for another 20 years? But you know what? Dave Merkin, at 200 episodes, Dave Merkin said at one of the table reads, well, we're halfway there. And it got a huge laugh, and then look what it...
My guest is Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Nancy Cartwright. She voices the characters of Bart Simpson, Nelson Muntz, and Todd Flanders on The Simpsons. Starting tomorrow, you can hear her in the new Simpsons movie. You said earlier that, you know, when like a lot of friends of yours who have children, or, you know, people you're just meeting who have children will introduce the kids to you and say, this is Nancy Cartwright, and she does the voice of Bart. And then they'll expect you to do the voice of Bart for the kids. What about your own kids? I mean, they grew up while you were doing The Simpsons. Did they do, like, Mommy, Mommy, do Bart for us?
As a parent, you kind of wonder what kind of influence you have on your kids in everything that you're doing, whether it's traveling, you know, to different countries or whatever. But when my son Jack was 2 years old, they had come out with a Bart Simpson. It was a prototype to see if the talking Bart doll would work. But the string on the thing was a little short, so it sort of sounded like Bart on helium, because it would be like, "Don't have a cow, man. Don't have a cow, man." But my son would pull the string, and it would say that, and he'd look at the string, and then he'd look at me. He'd pull it again, "Don't have a cow, man." And he'd look at me, and he'd said to me, "Mommy, I don't see you in there. I don't see you in there." He's 2 years old. I'm telling you, that is a concept. Parents will come up to me, and you know, I know that they want to hear me do the voice. But there's a 3-year-old clutching onto Mama's skirt, and they're saying, "Could you do it for Sally? Could you do it?" And I'm thinking, I'll just tell the parent, I don't have anything vested in this for a 3-year-old kid that looks scared to death. If I was to lean down and say, "Hi, I'm Bart Simpson. Who the hell are you?" You think that kid is going to like it? The kids look at me like I'm, you know, an alien, or they get upset. So I'll just say, "Look, I'll do it for you, but I'm not going to do it for your child. I just think that's wrong.
Why do the kids get so upset?
Well, it's too big of a concept. They're looking at this woman who, they might watch The Simpsons, but a child, I really think that they are watching it through a child's eyes, and they enjoy the colors, and they like the different expressions and emotions that they see, whereas a teenager will cull something totally different out of that. They will start to recognize references. And of course, adults, I mean, we can get the satire, and we can get more, you know, of history and even more references than a teenager would get. So there's a whole cross-generational span of The Simpsons that entertains those audiences. But a kid, I don't know, man. I don't know how old I was before I realized that those sounds came from actors. It's a concept that's pretty, you know, I'd say 5 and under. Just, this is a gross generalization. There are exceptions to the rule, no doubt about it. But generally speaking, I use some discretion on who I just throw that voice to.
Well, Nancy Cartwright, it's just been so much fun to talk with you. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, you bet.
Nancy Cartwright does the voice of Bart Simpson. The new Simpsons movie opens tomorrow. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with another scene from The Simpsons TV show.
Hello, gents. What will it be?
Pooh, give us a super squishy.
One that's made entirely out of syrup.
Entirely out... An all-syrup super squishy? What's such a thing has never been done?
Just make it happen.
Oh dear. She won't hold! She's breaking up! All done. If you survive, please come again.
Woo-hoo! It's so thick! Your turd, Bart!
Whoa, that's good squishy.
What's it like, Bart? Give me that!
Okay, we're young, rich, and full of sugar. What do?
Let's go crazy Broadway style!
Yeah. Springfield, it's a hell of a town. The schoolyard's up and the shopping mall's down. The stray dogs go to the animal pound. Springfield.
New York.
New York is that-a-way, man.
Thanks, kid.